Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Daily Premier League action and reaction. This is Football Social Daily.
This is Football Social Daily Friday edition, boxing off the week and heading into the weekend. And it's an FA Cup weekend as well, with one solitary Premier League fixture for good measure. The best of the weekend's action will be previewed on The Dugout tomorrow morning. Niall is joined by Matt Jarvis and Trevor Stephen on tomorrow's podcast, which contains a Gary Lineker story that you will not want to miss. Make sure you're following this show for notifications of when that episode drops. But on today, well, the FA Cup kicks off tonight, and it's a good game too. A rejuvenated Middlesbrough under the stewardship of Chris Wilder meets Manchester United, who for once are more together on the pitch than they are off it. Ralph Rangnick is posting some decent results, and it's actually the absence of Jesse Lingard this weekend that seems to be upsetting fans, which is really weird considering how little he's played for United in recent years. We'll be talking about his absence and looking ahead to the game later on today's podcast. And speaking of off-field bust-ups, there are shots fired from Catalonia towards North London, with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang taking aim at Mikel Arteta over his deadline day move to Barcelona. It's the first thing he's got on target for some time, and we'll be discussing it in full and looking at the fallout on today's podcast as well. On duty to do all that, we've got sports social journalist Joel Tudor. How are you doing, Joel?
Good morning. I didn't know I could get a tan from my bedroom window in Manchester this morning. The sun is blaring on me today.
Sunshine in Manchester in February is a very rare thing, but I'll warn you, we're obviously in different parts of Manchester because it was sunny a moment ago where I am. It's now raining, so don't get too used to the sunshine. Marley Anderson on the podcast today, our master of memes. How are you doing, Marley?
Good morning. Yes, not too bad, thank you.
Cool, right. Well, here's a question to get us started on today's podcast. Do Premier League football fans need to STFU and wind their necks in a bit? We've had a lot of fans recently who are complaining and moaning about the states of their clubs when maybe arguably they don't have it that bad. So I'm thinking West Ham over the last couple of days moaning about buying players or not buying players in the January transfer window. We had Brighton fans booing Potter a few weeks back because of the results they were getting on the pitch. And Leicester fans, before we went into this winter break, were complaining about Brendan Rodgers and questioning whether he was the right man to take the club forward. And then we look at both of your clubs, Joel, Manchester United and Marley, Newcastle United, respectively. We've seen angry protests from both those sets of supporters in recent years complaining about the management and stewardship of your clubs. But do these fans all have points? Do they all have issues with their club? And do they have a right to complain and protest? Is there too much expectation from fans, I guess is the question, Marley, right now, in terms of what their club can achieve? Because ultimately, there aren't that many trophies, there aren't that many European places, and with the investment that comes from the likes of Newcastle and Manchester City, it is increasingly difficult to compete. So should they be satisfied with what they're getting, which is top flight football?
What a vague question. I don't know.
Would you like some clarity on it?
Well, yeah, go on.
My thinking here, so now, this is where this has come from. So I'm a West Ham fan, obviously, and I was furious at the close of the transfer window because of West Ham's lack of ambition that we showed in that transfer window, not signing a single player when we already have a very threadbare squad, particularly in certain areas that clearly need reinforcements, i.e. centre-back and centre-forward. Now, there was an anger from West Ham fans that seemed to match the anger in the days of the Burnley on-pitch protests when they were complaining about the ownership of Golden Sullivan. And I felt that anger.
Was that when that guy carried the corner flag around the pitch?
yeah, that exact moment. And that was brilliant. Kind of a turning point in the club. That kind of seemed to wake up the board a little bit. And it seems to be happening again. But then I caught myself going, actually, what right do I have to be angry with my football club? We are currently fourth/fifth, well, fifth in the league, but competing for fourth. It's probably the best season I can remember as a West Ham fan. And yeah, it would have been great to see us sign players and kick on. But at the same time, do I have a right to demand that from my football club, who are already overachieving? I'm wondering whether, like, almost, and as a Newcastle fan, for example, you've been sustained by Mike Ashley in the Premier League, and it's great you've now got money and investment, and still there's Newcastle fans angry at the type of players that have been signed. Do you think there's just over-ambitious expectations from fan bases in terms of what their clubs can do?
I think there's always going to be, like, there's never going to be 100% of fans and in a fan base happy with everything that's going on. Like, it's just, it's impossible. It's one of them sort of things. It's like a mirage in the distance. Like, you can see and think it's there, this 100% happiness and everything, but it's not. I mean, there's even, you know, there's Man City fans who have had the best football, you know, they've had in their lifetimes in the club's history, and they're still angry that they haven't won the Champions League. There's clubs like Barcelona and Inter who won the treble 10 years ago, and they're in dire straits now because, you know, they had it good and now they've not had it good, and, you know, they're sort of experiencing the flip side of the coin. Man United fans have had 25 years of dominance, and now they're going through a stage where they're not dominant, and they're fourth and, you know, fighting for the top four, and they're all fuming as if they've got a right to be up there. Like, that's just football. I just don't think... There's always going to be something to moan about, especially with football fans. And if there isn't something to moan about, they'll find something, and they'll find something out of nothing. So it's just it happens to every club. It happens sometimes legitimately for reasons which other fan bases and general public can understand. And sometimes it happens where it's more of a club specific problem, like West Ham not signing a centre back or a centre forward. No other fans in the Premier League are really bothered, but West Ham fans are, and that's because West Ham fans have more feeling towards the club, and it affects them more because they're the supporters, and it doesn't affect me as a Newcastle fan because I don't care. So it's one of them where everyone will find something. Even if you've got a seemingly perfect life, there will be something that you can find to moan about. So I think it's just more human nature than anything else.
The West Ham thing, by the way, doesn't come from just this transfer window. If you're not familiar with the history of the club and the management of the club over the last decade, it's the lies and suggestions that the club are trying to achieve something that they show no evidence of trying to actually achieve at a board level that seems to have really angered the fans. But Joel, I mean, there's two examples I gave in the introduction there. Brighton complaining about Potter and Leicester complaining about Brendan Rodgers. These are two clubs that Brighton, it wasn't that long ago, they were in the lower divisions. Leicester City, it wasn't that long ago that they were at the bottom of the Premier League. And in recent history, they won, well, the FA Cup last year, they won the Premier League, however many years ago that was now. Should they just be grateful for what they've got? Should there be some kind of context in kind of remembering where they've come from?
I think in football, everyone takes the position for granted when it's going well, and also when it's going bad as well. I think there's a massive amount of recency bias where everyone suddenly forgets, like, for example, West Ham. You'll probably know better than me where, you know, a couple of years ago, West Ham were on the brink of the relegation places for a good couple of years, and then suddenly they're in the top four talk, and I'm sure... But I can understand the situation at West Ham, if you like, just focus on West Ham, just because they're in a position now where they could really, really push on and potentially change the entire outlook of the future of the club if in January they would have really pushed the boat out and shown ambition. So, of course, the fans are going to look at that and think, we're in this position, why not allow us to actually think we can actually progress more than we actually are? Because right now, I think more than ever in the Premier League, the top four places are just not a given for certain teams anymore. I think in the last 10 years, it's always been, okay, Manchester City, Chelsea, United, Arsenal, Liverpool, that's it. Now, I think the teams below them are starting to look up and think, actually, this can actually be breached for a lot of teams who didn't think that it could ever be done before. But I think in the Premier League, I think one of the biggest factors for fans getting a little bit agitated with the different kind of complaints that they have, especially like at Brighton, is just the fact that Leicester's title win a few years ago, I think it's really skewed expectations a lot, because I think they look at that club and they look at what they had and how it was run, and suddenly every team, I think, is starting to believe that, obviously not to win the title, but I mean to actually go on and achieve more than just, you know, 12th place finish in the Premier League every single season. Because, you know, once you start to reach an established level in the league and you've been in it for a good amount of years, what fan wants to just continuously maintain that position? Of course you want to progress. That's what football's about. It's about winning. And I don't think it matters how much you've won in the past.
You mentioned the recency bias, but it doesn't work both ways, does it? It's like, you look at Manchester United at the moment. If they had a recency bias, then they wouldn't be even thinking about the Premier League title, yet there's still an expectation from fans that that's where the club should be.
Yeah, recency bias in terms of, for example, the teams who like, for example, Brighton, who've been in the league for, well, they were in the Championship a few years ago, and obviously now they've maintained a decent position. So, of course, they're going to forget about the fact that they were in the Championship for such a long time, because they maintained a good position, they play good football, they've got players who've been linked to all the best clubs. Whereas for United, I think it's a different situation where, I get where Marley comes from, where, you know, there's no God-given right that you can be in the top four. But I mean, in terms of how much this club is making and how much budget this club has, they should be. I don't think it's a term of given, but they should be. It's kind of logical. When you've got a big amount of money in football, you should pretty much be there or thereabouts. But I don't think fans are wrong to expect more from the clubs, because fans aren't blind to the fact that a lot of these clubs are earning a stupid amount for maintaining their position in the league every year. They have the money to actually push the boat out even more now, more than ever, to be honest. So why not actually try and be ambitious? Because like I said, no fan wants to just continuously maintain 12th place in the Prem and just kind of, you know, trudge on like a ship in the night and just kind of hover around. They want to actually try and progress, and there's weakness in the league at the moment in terms of being able to establish yourself in the top six. And I think that's why fans are looking, like, for example, West Ham, who have suddenly kind of breached that a little bit. Leicester have breached it in the last few years, so there's definitely opportunity there. And I think that's why other fans are looking at other clubs at a similar level and thinking it can be done.
From a fan point of view, Marley, is there ever any point in protesting, in getting angry, in booing your team, in complaining about your board? Because they very rarely have an impact. You look at the protests at Newcastle United over the last 5 years about Mike Ashley. Arguably, that had no impact at all, and he would have sold up when the big bid came in anyway. And I think clubs know to a certain extent, what are you going to do? Are you going to go away? Am I going to go away from West Ham and start supporting Spurs because I'm not happy with the way the board are handling transfer windows? It's just not going to happen. So does this anger have any impact other than making the fans feel better that they've had a voice?
I think it can. It depends on a lot of things, but it depends on how the board, for example, if you're you know, fuming at the board and there's protests and things like that and flags and signs and banners and stuff like that. It depends how much they want, how much they care about their public image. Because if they're trying their hardest and the fans are moaning, then they're more likely to come to some sort of happy medium type of thing. Like, if there's no money being spent, if there's a manager, you know, on his way. We see impact with managers getting sacked. Do you know what I mean? Like, that happens all the time, and fans are singing sacked in the morning and, you know, booing the team off and stuff. And there's plenty of times where it's had an effect. I mean, I remember Newcastle when we went down to the Championship and we beat Spurs. I think it was 5-1 or 6-1 on the final day, and it was Rafa Benitez's last game in charge. And the atmosphere and the fans were so good that they made him stay. And that was it was a him decision. It was a little bit of a board decision because he was still under contract, basically. So the board had to do very little. Mike Ashley had to do very little to keep him. But there was an impact. There can't always be an impact because sometimes it's just not feasible. Like, there's fans that say, you know, oh, we need new owners, and new owners don't just grow on trees, and they're not easy to come by. Like, West Ham want new owners, but they don't, them three in charge don't want to sell, and somebody has to come along with, you know, 250 million plus to buy it. Like, it's not as easy as getting a new manager.
Well, we got the Czech billionaire who like bought 30%, and now everyone hates him because he didn't spend enough money. It's football have fickle fans.
Yeah, it is. It's probably the most fickle thing out there. I think the word fickle was invented to describe football fans, if I'm honest. But it's one of the things. No fans are ever going to be fully happy because there's always something to moan about. But that's just football. I think I don't know whether it's a British thing or an English thing or just a football thing, that there's almost like contentness in moaning. Like, everybody loves a good moan. You know, it'd be a crap podcast if I came on every week and said, yeah, you know, Steve Bruce is doing his best and he's a nice guy. You know what I mean? Nobody listens in to hear that. Everybody listens in and is like, right, well, what's going on with this guy this week? What's everyone going to moan about? You're moaning about not spending money. I'm moaning about the owners until very recently. And Joel's moaning about Man United not getting into the top four and messing Lingard's future up and all the rest of it. So there's always going to be something, but I think deep down people like a little moan, and the nature of football, there's only one team that can win the Premier League. So on the other side of that hand, you know, there's 19 teams that can moan about how things could have been better.
Well, we're going to talk about that Jesse Lingard story very shortly on Football Social Daily. We look ahead to Middlesbrough versus Manchester United in the FA Cup, which is tonight's Friday night game. Quick question, which I'll reveal the answer to when we get to the end of today's podcast, but I'll put it out to Joel and Marley first. When was the last time Middlesbrough won the FA Cup?
Oh, for God's sake, why did you have to give these questions, which are like some random 1944 or something?
Is that your guess, 1944?
No, it's not. I'm going to say like 1971.
71 says Joel. Marley?
1958
says Marley. Right, we'll find out at the end of today's podcast when Borough last lifted that silverware, and we'll talk about their FA Cup adventure next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. It's Manchester United versus Middlesbrough in the FA Cup tonight. And the big story surrounding this game isn't about either team's progression in the cup. It's about Jesse Lingard missing in action after reportedly asking for a couple of days off to clear his head. He was expecting a deadline day move to either West Ham or Newcastle United, but because of various very well covered off-pitch events at Manchester United, he was asked to stay, and he remains a Manchester United player, albeit not for the FA Cup fourth round tie with Middlesbrough. The fans seem upset by this one, Joel. Do they have a right to be? Again, we're back to whether fans have a right to be angry.
Well, another day at the circus, Jim. My God, it's just never ending at this club at the moment. Just story after story. But it's a tricky one, this, because it's like a he said, she said scenario where I don't really understand who's in the right and who's in the wrong, because Ralf Rangnick has been, and it's clear now, he's very blunt and he's very honest with players who are seemingly wanting to go from the club. Obviously, with Martial, he was pretty clear when he said that he wanted to, he refused to play. And then Martial came out and said, I would never refuse to play. And then in this situation, Ralf Rangnick has said that he asked for some time off. Lingard said that the board told him to take some time off. I don't really know what to believe, to be honest. But one thing's definitely for sure is that Rangnick is definitely not pulling any punches in terms of defending his players at all, the ones who want to leave. He's been very, very honest, whereas, you know, Solskjaer was the one who would kind of make up an excuse for players who are kind of either misbehaving or something was going on behind the scenes that they weren't exactly doing right. And I think that with this situation, if you're being told to take days off, surely it's come up in conversation that it's an issue that is playing on your mind if you're having a discussion about it. And I don't understand, because he's had 2 weeks off in Dubai now, and he's known the situation for a good amount of time. I'm just struggling to understand why you need more time. Like, why would you? Because he said that the club advised him. So that's not to, you don't have to. It's your choice if you want to take those extra days off. And I think Man United versus Middlesbrough is the perfect fixture to actually play for him, especially. So, you know, it's not like United have told him dead and straight, you're not playing tomorrow. It's your choice, but, you know, we think it's best. I don't know the exact ins and outs. So I don't want to kind of assume the worst on either side. But this situation shouldn't even be happening. And I think in terms of his move to Newcastle, a conspiracy theory on my behalf, but I think it's very, very political, because it was quite clear that a lot of the Premier League clubs were opposed to Newcastle's takeover. And I wouldn't be surprised if many of the top clubs would be happy to see Newcastle go down based on the takeover. So I think that United were just constantly moving the goalpost, where it was never ever going to get done for Newcastle to buy him or loan him. And I don't think he was ever going to go to West Ham, because of course they're now a genuine top four threat. So I don't think his move was ever credible. But I also believe that, you know, Rangnick said that he changed his mind 3 weeks ago about moving. So honestly, there's just a lot that's gone wrong in this scenario on both sides of the coin. So I wouldn't put blame on either side, but it's a messy scenario, honestly. But he's on his way out, and I think Rangnick just sees it as that.
It's definitely been mismanaged, this one, Marley, hasn't it? Because you've got the club saying that Lingard asked for time off, and then Lingard coming out and going, look, I'm ready to play. I want to play football, but the club have advised me to take time off. And as Joel says, this is a man who is struggling for game time. He wants to play football, and this would feel like the ideal opportunity for him to get onto the pitch. So it's just another case of maybe Lingard's reputation with the fans taking another blow, and Manchester United's reputation with the player taking another step back as well. It's getting toxic.
Yeah, it is getting toxic, but I don't... You know, I don't think Lingard has to prove anything anymore to Man United. He's been there for 10 years. He's never not wanted to play for Man United. He's always wanted... All Jesse Lingard has wanted in his career is to be a Man United first team player, like a genuine sort of star of that team and a valued member of the first choice 11. And, you know, this last year and a half has been nothing but an absolute waste of his time. Man United have dragged him along, strung him along on this false promise that there's games that he can play and he can come in and be part of the team after his great loan spell at West Ham. They give him, you know, a few starts and a few sub appearances at the start of the season. He did well. He even scored the winner against West Ham. You know, with the club he'd just come from, like a last minute, 93rd minute winner or whatever it was. And he was straight back on the bench again. So when it comes to January, he's thinking, finally, I can leave now and reignite my career and you know, have a fresh start and a new challenge. And then Rangnick says, oh, well, you know, he comes in what, November time, December time, whatever it was. And he says, you know, oh, well, you might play a bit, you know. And then he's like, okay, right, well, that doesn't really help me, but let's see what happens. And then we get to January and everyone messes around with it for whatever reason, maybe Joel's reason, maybe something else, maybe there was cross wires or whatever, I don't know. But again, another transfer window comes and goes where he can't get any clarity on his future. So when it comes to the end of that, and there's a game against Middlesbrough in the FA Cup, people are saying, oh, this is a great opportunity for him to play. But what's the point? Everybody knows what a good player he is. Like, he's done that at West Ham. He was very unlucky not to get in that England Euros squad. So he's got nothing to prove. What's a Friday night game in a competition which a lot of reserves get the chance in against a championship side, which aren't, you know, what are they, eighth in the championship or something like that? You know, what's that going to do for Jesse Lingard's career? It's not going to do much. So if I was him, and, you know, obviously he's not playing tonight, and we know that, but if I was him, I'd be like, well, why should I play for you when you've literally just f***ed away most of my career now? He's 29 years old, and he's been...
done for his World Cup chances as well, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah. That's exactly, and you know, we go back a year, and his contract was running out. He went on loan to West Ham, and then they duped him in with this complete bullshit of let's sign another. If you sign a year's extension, you can either get in the team or we can make money off you and not lose you as on a free. So they've had two transfer windows to not lose him on a free and to sell him. So they had the summer and they've just had January, and they've just picked their asses for both of them and just let him just expire. Like, it's pointless. They you know, last summer you could have had 15, 20 million for him. This summer, if you'd said to Newcastle, pay 8 or 10 million for him, then they'd probably have said yes. But instead, everyone was messing around with loans and, you know, we'll loan you and then you can see what the new manager, who the new manager is in the summer, and trying to string him along again. And I do feel a bit sorry for him, because it's not the way you would treat a guy who's been at your club for 10 years. He's always give his best. He's not, you know, he's had his, you know, his problems with being, you know, a bit immature and winding up fans and whatever with his little antics and stuff. But that's just who he is. Like, that's what you get with Jesse Lingard. But you also get a quality player. And then I just think they've wasted his career. And one day, I think maybe Lingard will wake up and think, why did I spend 10 years at Man United playing bit part roles, never really nailing it down, on this hope that one day I might break into the team, which I never really did.
When he could have just spent 6 months getting relegated with Newcastle. The options are plentiful.
At least he'd be playing.
Yeah. In terms of proving himself, Joel, I guess you could level the same at Paul Pogba at the moment. He is expected to play into tonight's game. He hasn't played a whole lot over the last 12 months, but he's back from injury and back into the team now. That's the expectation. Is he in his last chance saloon for Manchester United? Does he have anything to prove? Does he even care that whether he has something to prove or not? Because he'll get his move away to a PSG or a Real Madrid, whoever it is afterwards.
Well, it's the same exact same situation again, where United could have got probably 50 million for him last summer, and now they're going to end up losing him again for free to a bigger club. And that's the way it's gone at the United at the moment. They're just mismanaging absolutely everything. I mean, I don't understand how you let your club record signing run down his contract and allow him to leave on a free again. It just shows just how poorly run the club is at the moment. I don't believe, in terms of having something to prove, I mean, I think everyone would agree he has been underwhelming at United throughout his career. I think everyone expected something that he isn't when he arrived from Juventus, which is, you know, I think it's that transfer value kind of discrepancy everyone sees. You know, a good example is Harry Maguire. 80 million was spent, but he's not an 80 million pound player. Paul Pogba, 90 million was spent, but I don't think he's a 90 million pound player. He needs a specific system, and he needs top midfielders around him to actually get his level up. Obviously, you see it for France. Next to Kante, he looks incredible. Next to Vidal and Pirlo, he looks incredible. Next to McTominay and Fred, I mean, it's a different scenario altogether. I don't think many midfielders will look good next to them too. So
you say McTominay is not as good as Pirlo?
I am saying that.
McPirlo.
Joel's hot take of the podcast.
I mean, he's on his way. He's well on his way. But no, it's with Pogba. It's just this. Is honestly, it just disappoints me so much, because that one season under Mourinho where he got, I think, like 10 goals and 15 assists or something like that in all competitions, he looked the player that we thought we'd signed. And honestly, I don't understand the hate he gets, but it's purely because of that background noise around Raiola. Because from what I've heard and from what many people say, he's a great guy behind the scenes, and it just seems like pundits just enjoy picking at him because he's the easier guy, and because he's a bit flamboyant with his personality and his looks. These older guys just can't comprehend it, they don't like it, it offends them for some reason. But for me, he has to show it on the pitch as well, and too often than not, he's not, and that's just the facts of it. And to be honest, now I think United fans have accepted that the club's not going to get a fee for him. That's fair enough, that's their problem, it's not our money, it's the club's problem. They clearly don't like money, apparently, apart from the Glazers when they take the dividends every year. That he's going to go on a free. And to be honest, I think it's the best for all parties, to be honest, because I just don't see him going up any kind of levels at United unless we get a manager in who understands exactly how to utilise him. And he's not the player that you build your team around. He's the player who goes next to the players you build your team around. He's like a luxury player, in my opinion, who actually adds that flair to your team. He adds that creativity to your team. You can't base your team fully around him because I don't think he can step up to it. It's a rubbish scenario, and United have got themselves to blame, as they've got themselves to blame in Lingard, where they could have gotten 15-20 million, and I just genuinely cannot comprehend why that deal wasn't made. It was the best for West Ham, it was the best for Lingard, it was best for United, and it's baffling, really is baffling. It's the same with a lot of players at the moment. Martial's gone out on a loan, and he probably should have been managed a little bit better. And then the list goes on and on and on. To be honest, I think the club needs a whole reset. They're in a DNA crisis. They don't know who they are. They thought that they were this, you know, top three side, attacking wingers, Alex Ferguson football. And now it's just, they're in a bit of disarray. They don't know who they are. They don't know how to play. And now that there isn't that right of challenging for the league every year because there are better run clubs than United, suddenly they just, it's in panic mode a little bit. But I think right now is the time for a reset, especially in the summer. I think there's going to be a ridiculous number of outgoings, and you know what, rightly so, because I think a lot of players in there don't want to be there.
This is supposed to be a preview of tonight's game, so we better do a little bit of that rather than talking about the farce around the management of the club at the moment. You've got Chris Wilder at Borough at the moment, Marley. I mean, he knows Manchester United in terms of opposition. He's doing all right at Borough as well. But then Ralf Rangnick's having an impact as well. 3 wins in his last 4. It doesn't feel like Borough are going to make this easy for Manchester United, but at the same time, can you see an upset, or do you think Manchester United are just too good at the moment and will have too much of a focus on the FA Cup because it is probably one of their best chances of silverware to let this one slip?
Yeah, I'd be more tempted into thinking they could be an upset if it was away at the Riverside. But with it being at Old Trafford, I just think they'll have too much Man United. It'll probably be a typical Man United performance of doesn't look the best, but ultimately a few moments of quality should get it done. So I'll go for a Man United win, but they'll probably make hard work of it.
Well, speaking about farcical football club situations, Aubameyang versus Arsenal has taken a step up over the last 24 hours, with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang saying he had issues with Mikel Arteta that led to his exit. We'll wrap up today's podcast by looking at those comments next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Final bit of today's podcast. It's Aubameyang versus Arteta. Aubameyang versus Arsenal, whatever you want to call it. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has left the club, but not without firing some shots at his former team and his former manager. He spoke last night after his move to Barcelona by saying that he had a problem with Arteta, and that led to his exit. It's not very tasteful, this one, Joel. Where do you think this has come from? Do you think this came from Aubameyang being stripped of the captaincy after his disciplinary issues? He returned late from a trip away, missed training. I don't think he missed a game. I think it was training that he missed. So he was stripped of the captaincy. That seemed to be where things really deteriorated. But in terms of Aubameyang, it feels like things haven't been right with him at Arsenal for quite a while leading up to this point.
Yeah, honestly, with Arteta, I call him King Jong Uno, because like he's an absolute dictator. We can see it. It's happened with Mesut Ozil as well. He completely took him out of the side. We don't know the exact reasons for it, but he just seems to target the highest status players, the ones with the kind of biggest egos, the ones who have got, you know, the biggest earners, the ones who have got a lot of respect and have been there for a long time.
Do you think it's a problem with Arteta then?
I think so.
Like an ego thing that he's got?
I think he, from what I've seen, from what Arsenal fans have said and what they've kind of looked at him as, he just seems like a guy who cannot manage egos, or he clashes with them very, very harshly. And when they get on the wrong side of him, he doesn't know how to kind of bridge the gap between them. He just wants them out of the club. And to be honest, when you look at Aubameyang, he doesn't seem to me, and he doesn't strike to me to be the kind of guy who is, you know, causing rifts in the changing rooms. And obviously there's been talk of him having a bit of kind of a lifestyle off the pitch, which, as we've seen, you know, with pictures away with the Gabon national team when he was out partying before the actual tournament, that kind of thing. I'm sure he has that side to him, and fair enough, you know what, they're entitled to do what they want to do in the spare time as long as they produce on the pitch. But I did see a stat that he'd not contributed in, he'd not scored in 50 of Arsenal's last 70 games. And I think that is quite telling as well, that he's not producing on the pitch, considering the fact that he did two back-to-back 15-goal Premier League seasons. So, you know, it's not like there's no fault on his side as well. He's not been producing. But I don't think that's an excuse to completely exonerate him from the side, make a massive show of him. And I don't know the reasons for him, you know, when he came back late, there was talk of it because his mum was ill. I don't know the exact reasons behind it, but surely you just fine him, leave him out the side for like 2 weeks and then we go again, forget about it. But with Arteta, it's like once this vendetta's in his mind, he can't deal with it anymore. He has to get rid of that player. And I think it's telling with the reactions of the Arsenal players, the Arsenal fans, and also Aubameyang himself, who's clearly come out and said that, you know, it wasn't an issue with the club, it wasn't an issue with the fans, it was an issue with Arteta. So it is a shame that that happens. It's happened, you know, at Everton with Lucas Digne and Benitez. Sometimes when managers clash with the players, there's only one winner in that, and that's the manager, it tends to be. So it's a disappointing scenario, but of course, I think as well that Aubameyang's on a downward spiral in terms of his form and in his ability. I don't think he's ever going to reach those heights again. I feel like he lost a bit of a yard of pace in his game as well, but I think he's been treated so unfairly by Arteta. I think the same with Mesut Ozil as well, and there's some kind of dictatorship like complex going on with him. But for me, he'll forever be Pep's co-man.
Would you agree with that, Marley? Because, I mean, Aubameyang had problems towards the end of his Dortmund career as well. There were disciplinary questions over his behaviour there. But then Joel's kind of got a point in terms of the way Arteta potentially handles his player. And he is a student of Pep Guardiola. And Pep Guardiola's had a few fallouts with the big egos in his teams through the years. And you look at the Manchester City team he's got now, you'd argue there aren't really any big egos within that team. It's one of those situations where you've got workmen rather than reputations.
Yeah, I think I take Joel's point completely, and it's probably a fair one, but I think with Arteta it comes down to him being a young manager. He's still trying to establish himself in the game. He's not been in charge for, you know, around Europe's top leagues for you know, 10-15 years. He's pretty much a new kid on the block still. And I think when you have problems with players, personal issues and stuff like that, everyone's looking as how you handle it. And nobody, I think the worst thing for Arteta to do would be to look like a walkover, because that's what Arsenal have been in, as a club for 10 years. They've been a walkover. They've signed players on frees, on huge wages, and then looked chocked when they've been absolutely crap for them and sold them on for nothing. And you see that in the recent transfer business and things like that. And I think with Arteta, it's kind of like Aubameyang's done this before, and he's done it, you know, he's done it now. And then this time was the final straw. And I think that shows strong leadership, but that comes from him trying to establish himself and change the culture at Arsenal, because for too many years they've had party boys everywhere, you know, just sort of taking the club for granted a little bit. It goes way back. You've had players like Adebayor and Bentner were taking the mick years and years ago under Wenger and slightly later on as well. And the professionalism is something which does need to change at Arsenal. You'd probably go along with that and say something culturally needs to change at Arsenal for them to get back into that sort of top four or even top six, because it's not going that well for them at the minute. So I think if Arteta sort of, I mean, only him and Aubameyang know the reasons exactly, whether it was a sick mother thing, whether it was too much partying, but the fact that Aubameyang was sort of adjudged to be partying and then he went away with Gabon, and even Gabon sent him away, and Gabon need Aubameyang more than Arsenal need Aubameyang, especially with the African Nations Cup on the horizon. And even their manager went, this is too much, off you go. We won't play with you. We're not going to win the competition anyway, so off. And it was like, there's no smoke without fire for me. So he's done well to get the move to Barcelona off the back of all of this. But they're a club that are desperate for a bargain and will take that chance. And that's probably another story. But it's kind of telling for me that if this keeps happening at Arsenal, and then you don't keep backing it up with performances, you had two quiet seasons pretty much now, it is going to get that little bit easier to just cut ties and say goodbye.
I think you're right, though. I think there is a restructure need. We talk about it a lot, but getting rid of those bad apples, those egos in the dressing room, probably is the start of that. Whatever the cost, and even if that cost is £8 million in wages paid to Barcelona to take Aubameyang on a free transfer, which seems like a high price to pay, but arguably worth it. Right, we're going to finish today's podcast with the answer to the quiz question from earlier. Last time Middlesbrough won the FA Cup, Joel said 1971, Marley said 1958. The answer? Never. Bit of a trick question, I know, but I was surprised.
I knew it'd be never. And if I know you, you're a slippery git.
But isn't that surprising? A club the size of Middlesbrough never winning the FA Cup.
No, it doesn't surprise me. That's why it's a trick question.
1997, they lost to QPR in the final. 2-0. That's the closest they've got to lifting the trophy. Right, that is it for today's Football Social Daily. Don't forget the dugout tomorrow. And also, no doubt, a few FA Cup memories from the pair as well. I'll also be really interested to hear Matt Jarvis's take on the West Ham transfer situation we were talking about earlier. But that is today's Football Social Daily. Have a great weekend. Whatever it is you're doing, if you go into a game, enjoy that. Joel, Marley, thank you very much. And we'll see you for the next one.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.